Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls and friends beyond the binary, and my patron peeps, and my patron peeps, and my patron peeps. I said it three times for a reason. Because if you saw the title of this episode, to cozy up the bed for you, because it's time for the podcast you support. What do you say we get on with the... Oh, hey, patrons, don't forget to sign up for our patron newsletter, sleepwithmepodcast.com/patron newsletter. You're probably already subscribed, but just in case you're not, we have two newsletters, one for just major alerts and then one regular one. I don't know if by when you're hearing this, Ben, any of them have come out, but just wanted to get you the info. Thanks. Hey, are you up all night tossing, turning, mind racing, trouble getting to sleep, trouble staying asleep? Well, welcome. This is Sleep With Me, the podcast that puts you to sleep. We do it with a bedtime story. All you need to do is get in bed, turn out the lights, and press play. I'm going to do the rest. What I'm going to attempt to do, I'm just going to attempt to do it. So I do sound like, get away any misconceptions. I know I do sound like a daring, whatever those people are, stunt performer. I forget what they're called. What I'm going to attempt to do, though, is not, do trapeze or, it's a bit of a low wire act, because I don't even want to use that other word. It's a wire that's so close to the ground. I guess you'd say, well, where else am I going to get started? I could put the wire on the ground. What do you think I'm going to... That's the best place to... I'm just wondering. And they said, well, it's actually... Actually, we never thought of that. And I said, isn't this the Low Wire Institute of Performance-Based... They said, no, this is just the hardware store, sir. Once again, we told, and I said, oh boy. Well, I just wanted to come in. I find it very soothing to come in and handle your coils. Or spools. I like to just come in and I realize that I try to re-spool everything that I unspool. I don't think I make it as nice as it does, but, in those big box stores, it's just not the same. I don't even know if they have spools in there. But that you could just... I know. I support you, though. Every time I need something and I remember to come here, and then I overcome my resistance to go anywhere or to do anything, and then to do anything that might be helpful, I'll come here. Then I get distracted by the... Were you listening when I was pretending I was going to be, because believe it or not, while I'm talking to you, I'm also supposed to be introducing a podcast, but were you listening in while I was unspooling and re-spooling this? Maybe you're right. Maybe we should do an episode about this tonight. It's possible. So anyway, sorry about that, listeners. I got off track really early. What I'm going to attempt to do is create a safe place where you could set aside whatever's keeping you. Excuse me, I'll be back to my shopping here, your store. Also, is there an ace? Or is ace a name? Or is it like a, this other place? And what happened? I prefer to go someplace where I say, I don't know if I'm looking for an ace. I am looking for a value that's true. I know you got, there is that good jingle you have. I never know how it ends, though. I know ace is a place for your helpful something, friendly stuff, something, hardware stuff. Oh, the listeners just corrected me. Thanks, listeners. So anyway, I'm here. What I'm going to attempt to do is create a safe place where you could set aside whatever's keeping you awake. Whether it's thoughts you're thinking about. I mean, now you may have a few. You say, wait a second. Is that how those balancing acts get started? I mean, I remember when Scoots talked about when he was a gymnast school dropout. I mean, I'm no Pinky Tuscadero, believe me, but I did drop out of gym, whatever it was. It was a gymnastics, that's what they call it. I've talked about this. It's been a few years, and I probably shouldn't do it at the very beginning of the sleep podcast when I already went off topic once, but I mean, why not, right? Well, I'm trying to figure out a way to do it. Well, I got to gymnastics. I said, Mom, I got it. It was, must have been, the, you know, what after one of the big Olympics, and I identified with one, like some of the Olympians. I mean, it was definitely women's gymnastics. No offense to men's gymnastics, but I said, I got it. You know, I got to tumble. I got to spring off the spring horse or whatever they call it. And I got to pommel, you know, I got to pommel that thing. And she said, okay, well, I'll look into it. I want to help foster your dreams as a young lad. This was when my mom still had in it before. This was the before time, before she realized what she had her hands full of. And she said, so you're sure about this? I said, as sure as I was about everything else, I'm sure. I got to spring into the sky and flip around. And, you know, I'm as uneven as, you know, I'm going to make those uneven bars. Yeah, for sure, Mom. I'm into it. And then the first day of gymnastics class, they had us run down towards the pommel horse and step on the jumpy thing, and that was it. And I said, okay, like, this is an hour, right? Like, what time are we going to be doing the flips? I'd like to get in a, that's a, the teacher said, well, have you flipped before? And I said, if I'd flipped before, I'd be outside doing flips. No, I've not. And she said, well, this is an introductory class. And I said, right, the introduction to pommeling and springing, whatever this thing's called. I want to, like the Americans and Romanians and the Russians, I got to fly free. I don't think I knew who Nadia Comaneci was, because I think that was a little bit before me, but I probably said I got to do, you know. And she said, well, that's not covered, we're just running. And I said, well, I mean, I can run up and down. So that was the end of my gymnastics career. I never went back because my mom said, well, how was gymnastics? I said, well, we just ran up and down an aisle and stepped on a springboard, but we didn't even spring off it. Also, I realized that it was going to take a lot of, who would have thought? You can't just do a triple Lutz right then. And that's exactly, if you're into this, you know, that's how you end up making a sleep podcast. Those are the stages of, it must have been some formative experiences that really guided you towards this calling. And I'd say, yeah, like the time I dropped out of gymnastics class, or the time I made my piano teacher cry, or the times I made my tap dancing teacher exasperated, or is it something else? So anyway, if you're here, I'm here to create a safe place to take your mind off whatever's keeping you awake. I'm sorry, I'm so, if you're new, for a regular listener, this is a treat, am I right? But for a new listener, let me tell you, whatever's keeping you awake, I'm here to take your mind off of that. It could be thoughts, feelings, or physical sensations, changes, or travel, or just stuff. Whatever it is that's keeping you awake, I'm here to take your mind off of that. What I'm going to do is try to create a safe place. Then I'm going to send my voice across the deep, dark night. I'm going to use lulling, soothing, creaky, dulcet tones. Pointless meanders, superfluous tangents. I'm going to go off topic and keep you company and all that. But if you're new, usually I try to get to this stuff sooner, but you might have figured it out already. This podcast is very different and not normal. And it's made by someone that fits those monikers. If those are monikers, I mean, the show's made by a gymnastics class dropout. I mean, And I wouldn't say I dropped out of piano class because that was actually what taught me how to drop out of stuff. Because I don't know why I couldn't drop out of piano class, but I just couldn't. I didn't have the moral or whatever, I don't know if that's turpitude, though I probably was the same age. But I said, that's where I learned some of my great all or nothing, you know, ways of living. Kids don't live like all or nothing person like me. You either take piano class for 25 years and you never learn piano, or you go to, like, there's a happy medium. You could go, you know, go to 10 gymnastics classes and then say, oh, if I progressed or not, or 10 piano lessons and actually practice maybe. And maybe, you know, maybe be more open-minded about it. But it's okay. You know, we've all been children. And some of us are just a little bit more childish. That's just the truth. And some of us have trouble getting back to the point. So if you're new, a couple things to know. One, I'm an acquired taste. So there's that. So if you haven't acquired the taste for me, there's no wrong, that's totally natural. Actually, 90% of our listeners, they say it takes 2 or 3 episodes to acquire a taste for this podcast to not listen to it. I'm not quoting exactly, but they say, like, don't be like me and just run. You say, wait a second, the guy didn't put me to sleep. He just talked about gymnastics class. Even though the episode was called Unspooling My Dreams. And I said, well, hubba hubba. And I said, you definitely got the wrong podcast then. This is not Cinemax. So the spy kiss is a bit different, but the thing is you don't really listen to it. If you're still trying to make sense of it or wait to get started, kind of start to tune me out, or loosely pay attention. Kind of like I'm like a piece of tracing paper or something that you barely see. You say, okay. Because the podcast, it never really gets started. It kind of just putters along on a meandering path, and then I loop back. Also, this podcast really doesn't put you to sleep. It's just here to keep you company as you drift off. That's why the shows are about an hour, to give you plenty of time. But also, if you can't sleep, you could, you know, oh, wait, I'm going to be here to the very end to keep you company. So I'm here whether you're awake or asleep. So that's one of my jobs. Other things to know is, let's see, what else do you need to know is structure of the show. Show starts off with an intro, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls and friends beyond the binary. That's so you know everybody's welcome here. Then there's business. That's how we keep the show coming out twice a week on the regular. Then there's an intro. The intro goes from about minute 4 or 6 or something to minute 20, 22. And that's where I try to introduce the podcast, as you've seen, and then I immediately could get distracted and go off topic. Sometimes twice, we already visited a hardware store and a gymnastics class. And got, you know, a little insight into my childhood. So those are all things that at a normal intro you would cut out. Or you'd say, here's the sleep podcast. Let's get on to the sleepy stuff. This is Sleepy McSleeps, and I'm here to stuff up your pillow full of dreams. And you say, well, if my pillow's stuffed with dreams, how am I supposed to sleep? Because they're supposed to be in my head. You say, okay, well, but so this podcast, what was I saying? Oh, so the intro, it doesn't get to the point, but it's really part of the show. Like a lot of listeners use it to wind down and get some distance between the day and the night, whether you're in bed or you're getting ready for bed, or it's during the day and you need a break, however you want to use it. So that's the intro. Then there's business between the intro and the episode. That's the structure of podcasting. It's like a thing called a mid-roll. So that's essential to bringing the podcast. Then there'll be our story, which now, after this intro, I say, well, so I guess our story is going to be about unspooling dreams somehow. So that'll be interesting. So there'll be our story. That'll be about 45, 50 minutes, and then there'll be some thank yous at the end. So that's the structure of the show. Yeah, you don't really need to listen or pay attention. And then the reasons I make the show is one, because I've been there. I know how it feels in the deep, dark night, tossing, turning, mind racing, trouble getting to sleep, trouble staying asleep. So I'm happy to help if I can, because they say, well, I don't like that. And then the other reason is because you deserve a good night's sleep. I believe that you do deserve a good night's sleep, a place where you can have some solace and some rest and some comfort. And if you if this podcast can help you do it, then that makes the world a better place. And you say, well, it's not that big a deal. And I say, well, it is to me. I really do believe that it's a little like it's important that you deserve a place where you can be rested tomorrow and flourish. Now, the flip side of it is, like I said, this podcast just doesn't work for everybody. No, not everybody likes me. And I mean, I totally accept that. Or they don't like my voice or the style of the show. It just doesn't work for them. And there is other sleep podcasts and sleep audio out there. It's getting more and more popular. But so I hope you find something that works for you, or fans, or, you know, music, whatever it is. But give it this show a couple tries, at least, if you're having trouble sleeping already. Or usually somebody recommends this podcast, and just see how it goes. But yeah, I'm really happy, and I'd be honored to help in any way I can. And I appreciate you coming by. I really appreciate you checking the show out. I yearn and I strive, because I really want to help you fall asleep. So thanks again for coming by. And here's a couple of ways I'm able to bring this podcast to twice a week, right on time, Sunday and Wednesday. Thanks. All right, everybody, this is Scoots here, and this is a special episode that I didn't expect to make. It's about, it's been a while since we went, like the last time I went into other than in the intro, to a local, hardware store in my imagination, where the values may be true, or there may be aces, or maybe it's be, I guess it's interesting. I wonder if 99PI has done an episode about, hardware stores, probably, or maybe another economics podcast, because you say, well, I'm wondering if hardware stores always been affiliated. Also, good question, internationally, they're probably not called a hardware store, so I wonder what they're called. Let me know, wherever you are in the world, what you call a store or a shop you would go to get tools, I guess. You could get tools, you could get whatever. I don't know what are like nails and screws called, because they're stuff you use tools on, and usually it's very specific, and there's one specific feature. In the U.S. we still have what I would call local hardware stores. I think they're probably locally owned, but they're affiliated with broader organizations. Maybe they're franchises. And when you're little, and you go, you have an extra big cone of ignorance. Like to me, growing up in Syracuse, New York, that was the center of my world. I think it was Bob's True Value was the closest. It was the first hardware store I became aware of, and I thought that they were all Bob's True Value. And, but I don't think that's I don't think that was the case, though. Here's a question I don't even know the answer to. So in Syracuse, and this is a really hard one, there used to be a store called Big Boys, right? I guess it was, and there's still some in Southern California, I believe. And it was kind of like a sit down, bit of a diner. I think they specialized in burgers. I mean, to me, it was a fancy restaurant, and I've talked about it before, but the one in Syracuse was called TJ's Big Boys, but maybe TJ was the franchisee, I don't know. And both of these, I guess you could say, were '80s era, though the hardware stores still exist, at least, like, depending on where you live. There are big box hardware stores, those I find exhausting. No offense, big box hardware stores. I mean, sometimes I go there, but it's you know, it's not you're not easy to deal with at all. Let's talk about big boys for a second. Oh boy, let's talk about those big boys. Definitely someplace called Big Boys. Either one, you'd say that's problematic. I'd say you're right. And it had a big smiling cartoonish statue out front holding a burger. And the reason I miss it is because I think I've only eaten that. The one in Syracuse is long, 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 long gone. I don't know when it disappeared. It's surprising on the boulevard it was on that it was even there. But I guess in the when there was local malls, before a lot of times there was just a mega mall, which happened in Syracuse. And it put the mall, the rest of the malls out of business. You probably would. So boulevard, okay. A lot of definitions here coming up. This is an interesting episode. I thought this was going to be a surreal episode, and maybe we'll get into some surreality. But for the time being, this is we're grounded in some reality. An interesting, crossover of reality. Should I talk about big? Let's talk about boulevards. Now, in Syracuse, or streets, when I say a boulevard, I don't mean a picturesque boulevard with grass medians and a boulevard in the 80s and maybe in the 90s, yeah, would mean in the parlance of in the United States would mean. What is the least pedestrian-friendly thing other than a highway where you can't go as a pedestrian? If it was on Jeopardy, it'd say a place no pedestrian should ever go, even though they're allowed to, and don't even think about it if you're on a bike. What is a boulevard? And they say, correct, or there's other ones, but I think boulevard is... there were streets, yeah, because one was West Genesee Street. But then there was Erie Boulevard in Syracuse, E-R-I-E, and Onondaga Boulevard, which was the boulevard I lived closest to, but this isn't the boulevard. I don't know which boulevard I'm talking about. I think we're talking about Genesee Street in this case. But anyway, it'll always be a boulevard. You're not just a street to me, Genesee Street. And it may be West Genesee Street. I don't know if it was west of what. Maybe, I don't know. But so that was a boulevard or a street. It would be. It's not a highway. It may have a number, though, because I know those numbers and stuff mean stuff we could make this into a highway if we needed to. I think that's what those mean. We could make this, the state or the federals could make this into a highway, but we probably won't. And it's a state route, back in the day. This would be before highways. I don't know if this is what Route 66 was. But I'm pretty sure, you'd say Route 66 is would be a lot of boulevards. Those of you that travel the highways and the byways, especially these kind in my mind, I guess this is this will be a little bit of a tour. I thought we were going to go to a hardware store and pull on the, but I don't even know where Bob's True Value is. But so now we're on a boulevard. When a boulevard means... it's multi-laned. Sometimes the lanes would be separated with a concrete thing, though a lot of times, and it was a yellow double stripe, which means no passing, but you could pass, and they'd be two lanes, maybe three for right or left turns. And probably speed limit was a little bit higher, 35, probably definitely not 40 because there's a lot of lights, so a place where there's a lot of traffic, not a lot of walking. And so that is where Bob's or TJ's Big Boy was, the restaurant. And so if we were going to go there, other things that were on there would be a karate studio was right by there that I went to the introductory class. And my parents would, like, after the class, and I think we might have gone as a group for, like, Cub Scouts. And it was very intense, a little bit like the level of intensity in Napoleon Dynamite. But I think you also had to, it was just within my parents' belief system. I think you were supposed to pray to the, like, American flag in this dojo. And my parents weren't comfortable with that because they said, well, we have a belief system. At least that's what they told me when they said, I said, come back, I'd like to learn. And they said, no. And then they said, well, remember how stuff worked out with gymnastics class? And I said, oh, yeah, you're right. I'm a gymnastics class dropout. So there was probably like a photo studio. There's definitely like photo development across the street, because across the street was my first mall, Fairmount Fair Mall, which has appeared in multiple episodes, or what I can remember of it. But so Bob's, TJ's Big Boy, I think it's called Bob's Big Boy in LA, because I remember calling there, because they would have, because back when I had a job selling fuzzy dice, they might have been one of my customers, because they would have big car nights, and that was one of the ways that they kept it. When I know I read articles about this, so I'll have to look it up, when they talk about why in Southern California Big Boys is still in business and popular. It's like, oh, because of the back, and I'll definitely make a trek to one when we can travel again, because when I'm recording this, it's not an option. But so, because they would have big car nights or whatever you call it, classic car nights, or maybe one of my customers would go there and sell fuzzy dice. Yeah, that was one of my jobs as an adult, not as a college student or a teen, selling fuzzy dice and iron-on patches. So, like a Big Boys, I always imagined. Oh, I was talking about my first mall, Fairmount Fair, was across the street. So maybe we'll talk about that. But so the restaurant Big Boy, TJ's Big Boys, TJ's Big Boy, you're right. Thank you, Brain. It was, so it was a sit-down restaurant where you had a waiter or waitress. So it was not a, and I think maybe the kitchen was in the center of it. There was probably a salad bar, because, oh boy, 80s and 90s were like salad bars were the thing. I guess in my mind I'm picturing, so there was booths, and then there's probably counter seating and built-in stools. So this is something like a diner, like something you'd stop at on a roadside adventure, I guess. And, but to me, I guess we ate there, maybe ate there three or four times. I mean, I can remember the last time I ate there. I'm pretty sure that I ate there. It was definitely probably in middle school. And I could probably try to, actually, I could look up the date, so maybe I will, because I ate there with my dad. It may have only been my dad and I, or maybe one or two of my other siblings. And I don't know the reason. I think it was like part of a emotional journey we had been on. And this was the bringing back of the emotional journey, which I guess I'll talk about. I feel like maybe I talked about this on the podcast before, but maybe not. And I guess a lot of this is on my mind just because I was watching this thing about video games on, you'll see how it connects on Netflix. So you'd go in there, and it was very, it had a very chrome, like a golden chrome, loungy feel. The only place I've eaten in the last 20 years that would can compare is Emil Villa's, and that's a barbecue chain that I think is also slowly disappearing. That had, it wasn't retro at the time, but like even 20 or 15 years ago when I ate at Emil Villa's, I said, this is kind of retro. So they specialized in burgers, and they would make the burgers like how you wanted them, like say, oh, medium rare, well done. For a kid like me, you say, what do you mean? Because usually just eating a burger at McDonald's or Burger King in the Happy Meal. And their burgers were very familiar, like very unique, and definitely contrast with fast food, and probably came with fries and lettuce and tomato and everything, which kids probably didn't like. I also remember, so you said, well, I want it medium well. They would come with a wooden sign in your bun that said medium well. And I mean, just if you run a restaurant right now, like that has sit down, like these are the kind of things, small touches that could really earn you lifetime customers. I'm not kidding. Like when you're a kid and then you say, do I get to keep this? I don't know if I did or not, but, those are special things, those tactile things. So just and usually because it was made of like some sort of wood, like balsa wood or something, don't do it in plastic. Maybe a swizzle stick could be plastic, but just in case you're possible restaurant tours, don't do anything else other than swizzle sticks and plastic, which is something that usually comes in an adult drink to stir it. Or, you know, I don't know, sometimes you just underestimate kids. You say, well, this is a swirly straw. And you say, yeah, it's just a swirly straw you bought in bulk. Like, give me something, you know what I'm saying? So other than the retro feel, and I remember the place always felt busy in the burger thing, and then everything came on plates and silverware. I mean, for a kid, child in a family of six, this is a major, this eating at a place like this. I mean, I can't even imagine if we all of us ate there. One, I don't know if they'd have a place to put us all at one table. Two, I don't know. I mean, I guess my parents would order for us because I can't imagine if we, because you've all been to, even with someone with a few kids, if you go somewhere and everybody's ordering, even with adults, you say, holy mackerel, that'll take a day or two to get the orders and then get the orders correct. So I don't think we all ever ate there as a family, though we may have, or we may have eaten there as in a group. What was the other thing I remember, though? Oh, the smell. So the burger and the restaurant had a very distinct smell. Like, and I'm talking about some sort of smell. It was neither good or bad. I mean, I guess it was shading towards good, but it was unique. And I always associated with that. So that's one of the most forlorn feelings, believe it or not, of not existing, is not being able to go there to confirm the smell. And the smell was aligned with the food. And again, it wasn't an off smell. It was a unique smell. And the burger was what was generating the smell. And it was distinct. I guess it's not unique, because unique could say, well, unique still doesn't say, well, it's a distinct. This is just my memory, so this could be, and maybe it was because looking at the plastic big boy, but I remember the bun, like it was very uniform, but not in a fast food uniformness. And I think their bun was a bit denser than a light fluffy bun. And their burger was also, it was a thicker burger. We're talking about, you know, an inch, I guess, the top half of your thumb, you know, from your bend to your thumb. That's how thick the burger was, I think. But it wasn't it wasn't dense, like, you know what I mean? I don't know if you've had it before, you see, yeah, it had a density to it. I mean, not like thick, but you know, when you're hand crafting patties, you can make them, like some places have it where it's like very, I don't know. Those are just things I remember about it. I'm pretty sure the fries were steak fries. So the last time I remember eating there was when I was eating there with my dad. And I think this aligns with another episode I did recently. So maybe I'm just going through something in my subconscious. But I'm pretty sure this was a time when my family was grappling with some family stuff. And I was probably acting out as a result of that, or just being myself, which involved a lot of acting out and things not going well in school. And this dinner and what we did after dinner was a part of my, and maybe it was also me using the circumstances to my advantage, because it's always hard to tell with kids. Like, children learn very on how to influence their parents' behavior, which could be considered manipulative at times, or it could be Darwinian, where you say, okay, I'm going to take this situation and I'm going to use it to my advantage to get the most I can out of it. But so I remember eating dinner, and I don't really remember much about it other than like, holy cow, we're eating. But the part of the reason why we were there was because a couple doors down, now this was on a boulevard, so it wasn't like you could walk. Nothing was walkable, even though it was like three driveways down, you had to drive. And I wish, now it's interesting that I remember so many details, but I don't remember the name of this place. But there was a place, and again, this was a pretty big box era. So this was a place, it was a, before even big box places that went out of business, like Barnes and Noble, this was way before that. And this place, I'm pretty sure it was, and again, this was at the beginning of the computer gaming era. So there wasn't like GameStop or even Best Buy. And so, or even like Office Maximum or whatever. And so if you wanted to get computer games, yeah, there might be a computer game store at the mall or something. But again, on the boulevard. So this place, it was, I'm pretty sure it was a bookstore and it sold computer stuff, maybe not computers themselves. And I'm pretty sure it was a corporate place. Like, I don't know what chain it was. It wasn't, I don't think it was Walden Books because they were more mall-based. So I have no idea what it's called. I'd have to try to look into it. But what was my point? So we had gone there. So this was like, I was in the age range where I had, my dad likes to read, I think I had convinced him to go there, but really I wanted to go there to see if they had a couple of games in stock, there was a couple of games, and I think I talked about this a long time ago, but like we had, We had gone through a few different computers, and maybe this was when we had moved on to a new computer. But the computers in my life, the personal computers, we started off with a TI-99-4A, which was a Texas Instruments computer. And that was a very long time ago, but it could play games and cartridges. Then we moved on to whatever the first version of a PC clone was. I don't think those were 1086s, but I don't remember the first, for us, it was the first generation. So they were called PC clones because you didn't have to buy one from IBM, which was the creator of the DOS, because you could just put on DOS. I think it was always MS-DOS, or I guess a DOS-based computer. And we had got one, and you could build these, which you can still do today. I don't know, Rick was the one who built our computer, who's someone I worked with, who my dad worked with too. But so we had this one, and it had a graphics adapter called a CGA graphics adapter, which was not very powerful. It could only display like four colors at a time, which were usually, you had to choose when you were I don't know if you could choose in the settings, but like if you were playing a game, it would either be light blue, like a pink, and then black and white. Is that right? Or green, yellow. Well, I don't know. When it was green or yellow, I can picture like a red in there too. And no, I don't think there was no shading or anything. So I don't know. I've talked about it before and then I never remember. So it was low powered and then it had I don't even think it was 8-bit. Like, so its sound card was just very basic. And we were like a little bit, like usually, and just like me today, we were not early adopters. You know, we had six kids in the house. So this was like the previous generation normally is where we would get in on the technology. So at the time, the competing technology was called EGA, which stood for Enhanced Graphics Adapter. And then after that was something called VGA, which was Video Graphics Adapter, I think. And like the EGA, I think could display 16 colors, which was a lot compared to four. And then the VGA was like, I think 256 colors. And the same thing went for sound cards. Like we had like whatever, 8-bit or 4-bit sound cards. So it just made just like the, you'd hear like one step down from 8-bit music. But in some sense, there was something the sound card is not as distracting because you still, I don't know. I think the programmers were able to be a little bit more creative or they had a little bit more space. And a lot of times you just needed that one channel or two channels to create a, if you weren't trying to, because you weren't trying to create reality. At the time, the games were just not reality-based games. So at the time, I more had FOMO for the visuals versus the audio. And the reason I had FOMO was I had got introduced to one of my friends, Charlie. He had a 2GS, an Apple computer, an Apple 2GS. I think he also had an Apple II something else. But the Apple 2GS at the time was like absolutely groundbreaking. Like it was more powerful than even a VGA PC as far as if you wanted to play games or do creative things. Like it had like, it could display so many colors and it had whatever, I think they called it something number voice was how you rated the sound card at the time. So it was like, you could do like orchestra and it had like you could buy, you know, painting programs. And, I remember my friend Charlie, he was making music at the time on there. So early digital audio workstations, but where it really excelled for middle schoolers was video, like playing games, computer games, which are different than video games, just a little bit more complex. A lot of times less communal and larger in scope, and more story based, little video, like Nintendo and stuff had its own appeal. Okay. So this store we were going to, so I guess for me, especially because I was with like, six kids, and I had jobs on and off, I guess I would have probably still had my paper route in seventh grade. But so I still had some kind of income. And then by freshman, and then I got it. Like, this was back when I remember working at a grocery store. You could get a job like 14 or 15. Though I talked about that. That job did not last very long. I guess that was when I was a freshman in high school. But anyway, so where was I? Okay. Oh, so the store, whatever it was called, it sold computer games. And there was like, it was just weird that it was hard. You couldn't go online to buy computer games. And really, like, unless you bought computer game magazines, like, you really didn't know about stuff. Like, the way to market it was much different. So much of it was word of mouth. So and my friend Charlie, he got like a couple like computer magazines or stuff. There was even one that had like the walkthroughs and stuff like that. But so he knew a lot about, he taught me a lot about computer games. And one of the great companies, there's two great companies, or maybe three at the time, or four. Well, we get into the most important one is Roberta Williams and Sierra Online. And I've talked about her before, and she was just on this documentary. I would have liked to have more Roberta Williams personally because she's one of my heroines, but it was pretty cool to watch her because they did show her working on story for, you know, or remembering working on the story for one of her first games. But so she made these games, and two of the more popular games she made were called King's Quest and Space Quest. And they had spawned all these sequels, and they would come out for PC and Apple. And I think at the time, you probably had to put out a Mac version and an Apple IIgs version. And then on the PC, it had to be able to scale, ideally, at least initially, for CGA, EGA, maybe VGA. Though if you're using the performance of the VGA, you're usually probably using too much memory for CGA to work. But so she did have games that would work on. I remember I bought one or two games that didn't, like, our computer couldn't handle. And maybe I returned those. But at some point, and I don't think it was with this trip, like, I had read. So I started researching. I think maybe at the library they had computer magazines, or maybe I bought a couple. And there was this game based on the movie Willow. Because there was, like, the desire was, oh, can we get these games to have some sort of cinematic feel? And there was even a gaming company called, I don't know if they're called Cinemagic, but they had a couple games. They had a Three Stooges game. They had a Chicago, like, Untouchables-style game. And then they had, like, a medieval game. None of which, of course, I can remember, like, what they're called. But they were all very cinematic. And especially on the 2GS, they really use the graphics cards. But this company did not make this game about the based on the movie Willow. But I read that you could get it working on our computer. Or maybe this was when we had changed computers or changed graphics cards. I think I kept asking for a graphics card for Christmas, but eventually we just ended up getting a new computer because, you know, even like back then, like computers said, well, no, it doesn't work, you know, only works for a couple of years or the hardware changes. But I think we did get a graphics card and then maybe and I was very stubborn. I said, well, I'll just get me the card and I'll figure the rest out. But so I really wanted, like, you know, when you really want something, you desire it and you think it's going to, you could feel yourself. This was how I was with this Willow game. And it was a popular game, I thought. So, and I remember being like, because whatever the emotional journey my father and I had been on, the healing compact we had agreed on was like, or it was like, we'll go out to dinner and we'll discuss this. There was a lot on my father's shoulders at the time. So it was like, okay, we'll deal with this. And then we'll go get to this bookstore and look for your computer game. Or maybe it was like, well, how can we make this feel better? And I said, well, I just want to go get this computer game. And maybe even at the time I was like, I have the money to pay for it. But so we went there and of course they didn't have the game, oh boy. So I said, oh no. And, and then I remember being like kind of dismayed because, and maybe they even had it in Mac. So I like even had to look at the box or they only had the like VGA version. But I was like, sure, this was a game for me, that this was going to change everything. And I think I even asked, or my dad asked, because I can picture the layout of the store even. Like when you walk in, you know, had a big front window, the door was on the left, very typical, you know, outdoor, like walk in the store, glass door with the bell. Well, this was a larger store. And then, like, what, right when you walk in, there was displays, and I think the front of the store was the computer stuff, and then the back of the store is the books and the other stuff. And I think my dad and I separated, and I was, like, looking. But I also, and I don't know if it was this trip, but I think it was that I got the first version. So Sierra Online also had a new game called Community Resource Person. like trying to solve a mystery. And so I did get that game, and that game was like, it really was able to make the most. So I didn't ever get the Willow game, or if I did, it said it was going to work on her computer and it wouldn't. But I'm pretty sure I just never got it. But like, and I think I felt like I kind of settled. I said, well, I'll get this game. Or maybe it was just another time that I got that game, the community resource investigator game, solving stuff. And I got that game, and it was my mind was blown. It was able to make the most of, like, whoever programmed that game for a CGA, like a basic PC clone, had really outdone themselves, because they even though it was like just a basic beep, 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 to deep, beep, it, like they were able to have a beat, even though there was four graphics, it was able to present an experience that felt immersive. I mean, in a way at the time that made me forget about everything else. And this was different because I talked about video games in me. Like, and this is like, I guess that episode is kind of like an emotional intensity episode. This is more of the flourishing and the positivity of computer games. Like, it gave me this world to explore and like challenges to solve. And I think probably there were times I was obsessing over it, but it wasn't like when I played Nintendo or something where it was like, it was a different kind. Like, those are like very visceral, almost like animal level experiences playing those games a lot of times for me. And I struggled with addiction and that stuff. And computer games could be like that too. In this game, I definitely spent a lot of time in it, and a lot of time like trying to solve the different challenges and obstacles and puzzles, because it was like you're trying to solve a mystery kind of thing. And it was very rule-based and stuff like that. So I remember being like, holy moly. And I don't know if this was the first game in the series or the second game in the series. I'd have to look that up too. But just remember my mind being blown. And maybe again, yeah, I was a late adopter, because not that long, I mean, maybe it was a long time after that, the sequel or the third one came out. And again, I had the money to pay for it. And there was different things going on at my house, and whoever was helping take care of us and staying with us. And I remember telling her, like, I got to go to the store. I need you to drive me to the store so I can get this computer game. And she was a babysitter, right? So she was, like, torn. She was like, well, I don't know if that's like your parent. And I said, well, I have the money to pay for it. And there's this deep desire, in some sense, a craving. But it was also like summer. And I was like, I could really like get lost in this game, like, and have it would be really fun for me. And again, I was probably immature, so I was probably older than you're thinking. I am just not a mature person. And I remember her being unsure about it. And I said, well, you could ask. I mean, maybe I said, well, ask my parents. But it was just because the game had just come out or something. And I don't know if I called the store. But I can remember that one, because I remember, that feeling when you have something, I don't know, like brand new that you're looking forward to, especially as a kid, but as an adult too. And you're like, I can't wait to get home. And so I remember all the buildup, like, and it was almost like a challenge getting the game, but I had the money. And I'm sure at the time, maybe games cost $20, maybe they cost $40, I don't know. But it was like an investment. And then I was like, please let it work on the computer. Like, please don't. Because again, like with the different configurations. But I think I had research, and I'm like, no, this is supposed to work on a CGA, like lower, like whatever we have. And it did again and again. It was like, or maybe I'm like mashing up these memories, but it was like, it was an improvement on the other version. I don't remember the story or anything, But I just remember all the stuff you had to do. And then I think it did change, like, sometimes it was like a third person perspective, and sometimes it was like a POV first person. And that was new. Like, I think in the previous game, it was always like a third person, or like a, not even a third person perspective. Like, you're seeing it, I don't know what you call it, but like, you're seeing it at a distance and you're moving the character around on the screen. And it was side view, like, versus this was POV, and it would switch between the two. And then it had like, cut scenes, just like games today do. Though they weren't movie cutscenes, they'd be like more detailed pictures or something. And I'm pretty sure, and maybe this was the game, that it was like they even figured out a way to synthesize like a voice through like one, I don't know, like a walkie-talkie voice or something, where I was like, I cannot believe they're doing this. So... Or maybe, but there was also, I can also remember playing one of the King's Quest games and then getting that sequel. And that was where it wouldn't work with our computer. So that was like, so that was something. I don't know. So that, those are two things. I think across, so across this boulevard, I'm trying to think what else was on this boulevard, a place where you go when people, like a home, when people go to the place in the sky. Then there was an ice cream place, soft serve. One of my friends owned it for a while as an adult, Marnie, but doesn't own it anymore. Across the street in one direction was the Pizza Hut we would go to as kids when it was a big deal. One of the two Pizza Huts for a sit-down, big family meal, like special occasion. It was also a church that it was a Catholic church that was really well known for having a late mass on Sundays. So that was like, as your kids got older, you might have to go to that. It was like 4 or 5 p.m. on Sundays. And then as you got older, like maybe you would try to go there because it was more like if you had a crush on somebody that might be there, you'd be like, well, at least there's a higher priority of them being there. And then, yeah, the mini golf place I talked about in Mini Golf and Me or Mini Golf Memories was down there. And then Fairmount Fair Mall, which has been a long time since I talked about that. So I'll talk about that a little with our last few minutes here. And then I'm sorry, Bob's True Value, you know, maybe we'll visit you again. So Fairmount Fair Mall, let's see, what could we have time to talk about? So this was a mall that was there when I was like it wasn't a new mall. So whenever I became mall sentient, which would have been, you know, you would have gone there to get, and we didn't really get our clothes at the mall. So I'm trying to think of the first time I would have gone to, I guess you'd go there for like, you definitely go there for like walking around in the holidays, because that's when they had audio animatronics and a lot of cotton that was supposed to look like snow. And you could go there. Oh, also, my dad, when he was a smoker, like a pipe smoker, this is how different the world was. They would have a pipe shop. And sometimes they would either give away or sell really cheap to get kids early. You wouldn't get any tobacco, but they would sell corncob pipes. So I remember going a couple times and me and my brother getting corncob pipes. And this was the 80s mall, so you're talking, I'm assuming there was an Orange Julius, there was definitely an arcade. Maybe we got to go to the arcade when we were little, but like I don't remember going there too much until I was in middle school. There was the anchor store, like the anchor tenants, which would have been probably Sears and JCPenney and maybe one or two other companies that I'm forgetting. But yeah, the things I remember most about this mall were, one, the holiday decorations, because they were quaint, but in a cool way. Like, they, like, had, like, where you see, like, oh, that thing's pretending to saw something. Like, they would have a Santa's Workshop type stuff. They're pretending to, you know, that Santa's pretending to wave. Very basic animatronic, not animatronic figures, but like one motion figures. Also, like in Syracuse, now this was a one level mall. It did have some ups and downs, which I talked about in like an early mall walking episode. So it wasn't all on, it was only one floor. It wasn't level though, which I think was either brilliant or just how they had to design it where they built it, but it gave it some variety. And also probably prevented it because it was just one long thing from being one long thing. And then down the middle, it had a trough on and off with like water. Then there'd be a fountain with like tons of skylights. What else? And then a very big memory of mine was one time my dad volunteered there. Let's see, this, how do I term this? My dad had a volunteer shift for the March of Dimes, and they did a fundraiser every October. And this was like a store that had gone this year. This was only a year. Oh, no, we went to it a couple other times at different places. But this was this particular year, one of the anchor tenants at this mall had left, probably because this mall was slowly in the decline, because then they had built a new mall, like literally like a half a mile away. So this mall would see this slow decline, but or maybe it was a mile away, but it wasn't that far. And then that mall would see a decline, but those were the malls of my youth. Maybe I'll do another episode about this more. Say, Scoots, really, I say, yeah, you know, we got to do this. But so, yeah, I guess this could be a series, the malls of my youth. I mean, I like to talk about malls. I've talked about them before. Why am I debating myself about this? But so this one memory I'll finish with. And, you know, I was like a stubborn kid. Now, this was probably like, this was in grammar school, but maybe I was in sixth grade and my brother Carl would have been in fourth grade. And it was just the two of us. So we'll say that maybe I was in fifth grade and he was in third grade. But my dad was volunteering at this thing they did in October to raise money for the March of Dimes, where you were led through a house of surprise and fun, themed around the Halloween season, if you catch my drift. And my dad was the volunteer for that day's shift, which I presume would be like 6 hours. I mean, it felt like we were there for like 8 hours. And at first I kind of felt like whatever the arrangement was, my mom was like, you're taking those two kids with you. Or my dad was like, why don't you come with me? It'll be fun. And I was like, I want to watch cartoons or whatever. And so first I think me and my brother were ornery. And then it kind of felt cool because my, like, it was just such a different thing. My dad was like selling tickets and people were coming and we had seen inside before it got started, but I was like, I'm not a brave person. So I was like, well, I don't want to be in a seasonal display of surprise and fun. I don't find that fun. And the people that were dressing up as character actors for this seasonal display of surprise and fun were coming, and they were being kind. They weren't trying to make us not into it. And they were like, oh, you should come in. And it was very cool in the sense that you had a tour guide. So not only was there, and I'm assuming these were teens that were volunteering, but maybe they were just community members supporting this organization. But so they, you'd get led through it. And it was through a store that we had been to. So I don't know which store it had closed, but that was another cool thing was like, I know I've been in, I was at this store before it went out of business. But so it finally, like, they kept being like, come on. And I was like, no, I can't handle it. And I think my dad was like, well, I'll go with you on my break. And I was like, no. And I had to wait. And this wasn't the only time. My younger brother had more courage than me and had to lead the way, which he's probably done a lot of times in his life. So thank you, Carl. Daniel and Julie, if you're listening, hello. But so Carl went, and he either went by himself or with my dad through this display of, usually this is the older brother's role, I think, but not in my case, because that was just like the same thing with roller coasters. I would have to wait for Carl to go on it first. But he went through the display and then came back And then I said, oh, wow, you made it through. And he goes, yeah, it's so cool. You got to come with me. And then we must have gone through this thing with every single group. So we probably were annoying. But I can remember, it was, again, like being, I remember just, like, thinking about the story that the guide was telling us and the sound effects and being impressed. Like I said, I think some of the stuff is, like, even... set up to the sound effects, because there was like the chimes when it turned midnight, and that's when like a bunch of action would happen. And then there was a couple other displays you went and looked at. It wasn't anything like these modern places of seasonal surprise, not that level of intensity, but somewhere enough that I think it was more geared towards, I mean, I'm sure adults and kids went, but it wasn't just for kids. Like, it wasn't toned down to that degree. Because it was made to make money for the organization. And I just remember, it's like definitely a treasure memory of mine, that it could have been something that I was resistant and afraid of. So I don't know if there's a takeaway there. Have a younger brother that's braver than you is one takeaway, and appreciate that. But also, it was just cool, because then we went through it so many times that we were like picking out more and more details, like with Ray and the theme parks, of like, wow, look at that. Or maybe we were even starting to sneak off or walk slower. And then it got to a point where it was like, okay, now I remember these pillar, you know, stores like in the mall like that. And this was more of an anchor store. So it was like and these old malls, they were like one story, but the anchor stores were sometimes two stories, or they had high ceilings because they were like a story and a half. And so they'd have these big pillars, and some of the pillars would have mirrors on them and stuff. So I don't know. And then, you know, I remember just like actually like being with my brother as the characters were like playing with us, or then they realized we were game. So then they were trying to surprise us. It's a really great memory of, so I guess that's like one of the boulevards in my life. That's really a street. So thank you, Genesee Street. You've been here for so many episodes, really. Good night.